And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Fans of Power podcast. I'm Tyler T-Rex Baker. And, of course, as always, is my partner in crime, the crazy, rotten Joe Amato. Joe, are we ready to dig into mass hysteria, glory, good stuff, bad stuff?
And ready to hit it all, I guess. Yeah, you're right. That's why I figured, you know what, let my backdrop be Jason this time, you know, because I'm sure we'll be hitting some kind of version of horror during this podcast.
Yeah,
so,
a nice, painful death to the end, you know. But then again, too, like Jason, it's very well, the writing team.
Could come back.
They could come back. They could rise from the grave, you know, a la Jason 6. We could dump these guys in the lake and they still find their way back to the surface to keep rewriting more and more He-Man and Thundercats.
Oh, boy. You want to save that goodness for last?
Paramount kept paying money for that. DC and Mattel will keep paying these morons to keep writing more, so.
But at least Jason's good, though.
Jason's good, but I'm saying it's like the equivalent, but the anti-Paramount is Mattel and DC paying these two morons to continue to, you know, I got a brilliant idea. Hey, look, I got a really bad one, too, and I can make it, you know, crummier.
So do you want to do that last? Do you want to get it out of the way? What do you want to do? How do you want to
start? I'd really get it out of the way.
Okay. Well, I'm sure everybody out there, you know what he's referring to.
I don't know. Yeah, I'll let you pick. I don't want to dictate. I just always like ending our show on a higher positive.
Well, then we'll just let's
if
just
get possible.
All right. Well, we'll hit it off right now. What Tyler's referring to is the final issue of the He-Man Thundercats comic, the great crossover. So, were things answered that, you know, we figured were supposed to be answered, as a lot of people said, you know, would we find out the means behind stuff? No, not really. But basically how it starts off, Lion-O and He-Man come back to Eternia. When they come back, they see that, you know, all the heroic warriors, I mean, and Thundercats, everybody's all injured and hurt and dying, it looks like. So He-Man realizes, okay, got to get into Castle Grayskull, you know, Battle Cat will tend to the wounded or something. I guess he's going to be able to make sure they're okay, whatever, I don't know. But so they go into Castle Grayskull. He takes Lion-O in there, and he's basically letting Lion-O, like, okay, watch your step and where you tread in this place, because you could easily get lost. And they did what I said was, for me, it felt like a version of one of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, when Jacob, you know, the boy was in the dream and like all the stairs are upside down, everything's all twisted in every direction. Yeah, from five. Yeah, when the stairs are twisted, everything's in just so many different directions, whatever. So that was something. And then finally they realize they got to get to, I don't know, this, the find the power inside of Grayskull. And that's where you see Mumator, because even though He-Man will call him, or I think Lion-O calls him Skelebras somewhere later in the issue, whatever. But, so they got to get there, and he sees them, and he has a sorceress basically by his feet. And he has this orb, and this orb is, I guess, what the power is supposed to be. That is, I don't know if this is the whole power of the, controls the multiverse, some nonsense, whatever. And with that, see, I'm trying to give you the quick rundown of what I remembered in my head. Now, let me grab for this issue so I can try to scroll through some of this goodness really quick, because I want to give you guys the quick little kind of rundown on this of what's going on with without sounding like I don't know what I'm talking about. Because I tried to just give you
at this point. Does it really matter to know what you're talking about? Because these idiots sure didn't.
Well, I figured, hey, I'll try to give the quick little mental memorization. But anyway, so they get this orb. Mumra has it. And when Mumra has it, suddenly it turns, it's used in the multiverse, because this is controlling, I guess, going through all different types of universes. And because Mumra and Skeletor are both, you know, the one that's holding and controlling this, it takes it to what I guess would be their kind of version or vision of what would be a perfect world. So it's a mix of kind of like both worlds, it looks like. And so they're going on. He-Man is battling, and so is Lion-O with Mumator. A lot of just nonsense dialogue that wasn't even fun. This was the first time. You know what's weird? The other times with the dialogue, I said that there was things that, yes, it seems like it was, there was a lot of childish comments. Like it felt like a five-year-old wrote some of this stuff, and the name calling and just silliness or just stuff that made no sense to the series. This This dialogue just felt so lazy and clumsy, it wasn't even holding my attention. Not saying the last time it held it, but at least I could read and be like, okay, I can kind of get this garbage. Oh, I kind of get this garbage. This, I was like, I don't even care what's being said. It was annoying me that much. So they're trying to get the orb from him. And eventually, He-Man finally gets the orb. He got the orb from Mumator. Mumator yells no. And then what happens is supposed to be something, I guess, cute and funny, I guess. It goes to where they think they're going to Eternia. And then He-Man suddenly says, this isn't Eternia. And he's like, I don't understand. And Lion-O says, hey, He-Man, isn't that you? And they're basically, they're like at the Daily Planet. And He-Man is, Adam is playing the role of Clark Kent. And there's Jimmy Olsen. And there's Lois. And Lois is calling him Eterniaville instead of Smallville. Like, oh, it's so cute and clever. And Perry, or what's his, was it Perry? Or who's the guy that's their boss? I can't even remember.
White.
Perry White, yes. He's calling him Grayskull, you know, instead of, you know, Kent, like Grayskull. And so then Mumator appears. He still wants the orb. Lion-O says, so exactly what is all this? And then He-Man says, well, my mother's from Earth. I always wondered what my life might have been like here. And then suddenly you see Adam going outside and he rips open his chest. And he's like, this looks like a job for. And he has a symbol of like the Superman shape, but the He-Man Iron Cross in there. And then Lionel's like, is it just me or is this kind of? And they said, yeah, let's get out of here. But okay, let's say. I know Tyler just went into a coma. I almost went to when I'm reading this. But okay, here's the thing. Let's say you are envisioning, what would your life have been like if you're on Earth? How is it your life is now Clark Kent slash Superman's life? How did that, Tyler, for not even reading it, does that make sense? Do you get the gist of this? I'm like, huh? You would envision that, even though you...
Oh, yes. I mean, it's clearly, it's just... easy, you know, it's you know, I feel like if I were to go any deeper into the explanation, I feel like it would spoil, I mean, obviously a wonderful sequel that we, the fans who worked hard to keep it alive on the internet,
right,
we deserve to know how the hell would Adam end up on planet Earth under the name Grayskull and just so happen working at the Daily Planet with Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen and Perry White, and I'm sure he's going to fight Doomsday and Lex Luthor wants the power of Grayskull for himself instead of the last son of Krypton, and Clark Kent somehow is the love child of,
right,
you know, Marlena, you know, and Randor, and it's just one big, you know, colossal, you know, big, sloppy, greasy turd sandwich that we're being asked to pay $4.20 for the next 6 months.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I mean. That's like,
you know,
well, that was a good way of explaining all, at least getting rid of one of the comics. But no, that's what was annoying. It's like, okay, if you wanted to give a vision of what do you think your life could have been like on Eternia, it would have been interesting to see something that would have been different. But no, instead, we're getting Superman's vision of, I mean, it's Superman's life. I was like, okay, whatever. So that was that nonsense. So then there you have Lion-O. Oh, let me grab this again. You have Lion-O and He-Man both touching the orb now. They're both touching it at the same time. And so this created a combination of the universes of both of their visions. Oh, shit. Sorry, fans. Didn't mean to say that. Shoot.
Oh, no, I feel like this is Thunderdome when it comes to this. You know, it's like, you know what? This calls for a certain choice of words. We can make exceptions with this kind of crap. And I suddenly think Joe has just offed himself live on the internet because
I'll be back.
I wait one too many times.
Hold on a second. I'm coming back.
I think Joe has been resurrected. You know, Joe Amato lives here. Maybe he was struck by lightning. It's the only way he could bring him back to life after reading this monstrosity for 6 months. Well, while we try to bring Joe back from the dead here, people. Joe?
I think I'm back in my back. Hold on a second.
It's like watching the Blair
Can
Witch.
Can you guys hear me?
Toledo, Ohio.
Hold on. every time I read about these comics, it gets crazy. Hold on. Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me, guys?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Let me put in my... I lost everything. I was reading, and I lost my thing. But, hey, that's what's live about it. What the heck?
I've lost my mind, so we're even.
Yeah, sorry about that. So, okay, well, I'll go back to the comic now. So, yeah, you have a combination of everything. You have them saying, what is this Eternal City? And it's like, you know, they look like your friends, but then Man-at-Arms is a combination of Panthro and Man-at-Arms. Chitara is a combination of Teela and Chitara. So she's Chitila, and he's Panthro-at-Arms. There's then the Jagaris.
Let me ask you this. Are the names actually written like that?
Yes, they're actually written like that. Yes, they're written like that. And then suddenly Panthro-at-Arms looking, he's like, Jagaris. It's a combination of Jaga and the Sorceress. And they're like, you know, oh, they mean us no harm, talking about He-Man and Lion-O showing up. And then they're like, and then you see somebody say, they better not. And then it appears it's Orko / Snarf, and his name is Snarfo. You know, he's like, you know, Snarfo, Snarfo. So I was like, oh, great. And he's got an S on his cloak. So Mamator follows them again. They start fighting to where they have to get out of there. Once they get out of there, they then go to what Lion-O sees is the past, apparently, because this thing, this orb is not only creating different universes, multiverses, but it can apparently even show the past. And he's seeing before he got on, they all got on the ship to leave Fundair before it exploded. And so you see Claudius, and then so Lion-O's even thinking maybe if he would stay, or if he would did something, maybe he could even change the past or something. So this is like his thought on that. But they get out of there. And then now they're back to fighting Mamator again. Like I said, it was just back and forth between that, the fighting. I think Mamator gets the sword. He has this. They're again back and forth fighting. And then they make it back to actual Eternia. When they make it back to actual Eternia, that's when Mamator now has the orb again. He's bringing in all the evil warriors and mutants to fight and take out He-Man and Lion-O. But then the Sorceress rises up and is like, okay, you can't do this alone. Well, you know, like you can't fight your own battles, Mamator. So the Sorceress brings all the heroic warriors and, of course, the Thundercats and even then some to come fight. So there's a big battle between all the evil of both sides and all the good of both sides. And between the battles back and forth, you'll see Panthro fighting Merman. You see Tyra going against Clawful. I think they even had... I think Thomas said it was Retila, maybe, and not Retaro, but Retila. Oh. What was that? Okay. Ram Man's fighting him. So there's, like I said, they're trying to show like this giant splash of finally, oh, here's all the battles we ever wanted to see. But okay, just you have Stridor smashing on Trapjaw's face and knocking his jaw off again. So it's the second time he's lost his jaw in this.
And whoops.
Yeah, the second time we've seen that. And then a stupid thing. Panthor gets...
So everything you just named off is like, that wasn't stupid. No, this is the stupid thing.
Yeah, well, this is. Snarf kicks Panthor in the nuts and beats Panthor. So Snarf beats Panthor by, I guess, just kicking him in the nuts. So, I'm not even enthused. That's why I'm trying to rush this, guys. Everybody's out there listening. I apologize, but
Most of the people who are listening to this know what we stand on this.
I mean, it's not even fun. It's not like last time. I'm trying to. I mean, even the last issue.
You didn't have fun last time either.
You're right. I didn't. But this one had me so disinterested. I was like, I don't even care. So, all right. So it's finally Lion-O and He-Man are bad and battling Mamator. And they figure their way of doing it and beating them is they're going to combine their powers. He-Man says, by the power of Grayskull. Then Lion-O says, Sword of Omens, and it said, we have the power beyond power. After that happens, a big blast of energy shoots into Mamator and separates them, but then it basically like makes them disappear and disintegrate. And then He-Man turns back into Adam. So after He-Man turns back into Prince Adam, and the Sorceress is showing, I guess, the vision, I don't know how it happened, but anyways, Lion-O seeing the vision again of maybe he could go back, maybe he should try to live his life if he could save his dad. And He-Man basically lets him know that, you know, if you do that, you're going to change everything now. And he's like, you know, you're still a hero to everybody, but the whole universe. So after that, there's a celebration. All the heroes are celebrating and they're exchanging stuff. You have Man-at-Arms exchanging weapons with Panthro and Tigra and vice versa. You have Wile E. Kit and Wile E. Cat giving Orko one of their surf or their hoverboards. Like, well, okay, Orko hovers already, but a hoverboard, that'd be pretty cool. Apparently, Battle Cat's a baker now because he bakes some Cringer snacks or Cringer cookies to trade with Snarf, who made some Snarf snackies. It's like, it's done. I'm already done with it. But so as that's ending and they're separating, they're leaving, the Thundercats get back on their ship, flying away. As they fly away, you see He-Man say, "Thundercats ho." And of course, maybe it's Lionel says, "By the power of Grayskull." And that's like the last splash page. And then it has the end, and not the end with an exclamation, not the end with a period. You have the end. I'm sorry, wait, you have the end with, hold on, I had something get in my way there. Okay, yeah, it had the end with a question mark. So that's what annoyed me. I was like, a question mark? Do you think anybody wants more of this? You're actually giving us like, hey, hang in there. You might want more. No. Don't give a question mark at the end. Give a nice exclamation. Let it say it's done. Nobody wanted this stuff. The sales dropped every single month. I'm glad it's over. It was a hot mess. Tyler, go ahead.
I swear, if I had to sit through another month of, you know, it's just like, and this is the big climactic ending. A bunch of shitty, you know, what if scenarios, and you know, oh look, they defeat all the heroes. Oh, wait, I brought them right back. Oh, we've just suddenly defeated this ridiculous concoction of the two of the greatest 80s villains, or the two greatest 80s villains. I couldn't go through another month. If I did, I'd have had to look over to my apartment window here and suddenly just jump out the window.
It was bad. I mean, it was just bad. What was that sound effect?
Somebody jumping out the window.
Oh, I can't let her just scream. Yeah. No, I apologize. I was having some things that was going on as I was doing this. But hey, it's not like anybody was missing anything. This was just, it was bad. If there was people out there that liked it, hey, I mean, more power to them. I hope they enjoyed it. But I couldn't stand it. This just got worse and worse. And I was never so excited to see a series end as I was when this final issue came out.
It makes no sense for people who were just, you know, even if you're casual fans, even if you're a casual comic book reader, I'd like to think at some point that as a comic book fan, you know, you've read good stories, you know. I mean, and everybody has a difference of opinion of certain artists, certain writers. Certain stories were good, certain ones were not. There's always a conflict of like, you know, oh, I thought it was great, and this and that. I just feel like the majority has to genuinely feel that this is the worst possible attempt at crossing over in my opinion, the two big 80s powerhouses. I mean, G.I. Joe and Transformers come third and fourth, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I put He-Man, Thundercats, Turtles, then G.I. Joe. But I just think that this is, there was no excuse for DC to, you know, edit these and think this is great. This needs to be on the shelves with our other flagship books of Superman and Batman, Justice League and Green Arrow and The Flash and, you know, and everything else. And from Mattel, for like, yeah, we can endorse this. This is great. You know, it's like George Kennedy taking a bite of the cupcake and making 33 and a third. Like, he doesn't want to admit it, but he's like, oh, it's great. You know, it's like, no, it ain't great. You know, it's just, you know what? I for 6 months, it's gotten snowballed into a big ball of hell. You know, it sucks. It sucks so much for people, for hardcore Thundercat fans, for hardcore He-Man fans, and fans of both properties. This is what we got. This is, you know, people said it'll get better. No, it's just like, no, it'll get better. You know, no, I didn't think it was that bad. It's just like, it's getting to where I'm like, people, if you like it, fine. I just feel like people are going to have a hard time trying to defend it as a good crossover. Like, it was worth the money. It was okay. I liked it, you know. I mean, like, anybody who really felt like this was worth the wait, this conquered all of the what-ifs, the things that fans wanted to see, they got it through this. And I want to emphasize again, this can work. This crossover, these two properties can still have a badass crossover. I mean, it really could. And it would not be convoluted, complicated, and wasting precious ink, color, pencils, time, and space, throwing in a bunch of crummy what-if scenarios and multiverses and all that other nonsense. You don't need that in here, you know, and just making up logic as you go along because you can't do it right the first time when you're just throwing out random stuff and hoping it sticks and hoping nobody is going to call you out for being a fraud. You know, it's like these guys had no business writing this. It was just like the laziest tap on the shoulder. You know, we've tapped you to write it. Just go. Just, you know, oh, you had Stratus as a kid. There, go.
I just think they were trying to DC-ify it, if you will, too much. That's what I mean. It's like, okay, you know, do we have to have the multiverse now here for Masters 2? It's like, okay.
That's not something you do in the last issue, you know?
I know, that's what I mean. It's
supposed to be the big climactic battle, and it should have had, in the most logical world, you'd have He-Man and Lion-O teaming up to fight Skeletor and Mom-Ra. Maybe not at the same time. You have Mom-Ra going after, you know, He-Man, and Skeletor going after Lion-O. Have them fight it out, and then towards the end of the issue, they team up, both sides team up to fight Evil's Conquered. You know, you got a good, you know, handshake honoring, you know, hey, look, you're a great fellow warrior. You know, I hope, you know, our paths will cross again soon. You don't need just this whole, like, oh, I mean, Snarf Snacks, and I mean, Cringer Snacks, and this too. And, oh, hey, let me give you this. It just seems so silly and just childish.
Yeah. I mean, just how it was finished at the end, it really did feel so rushed. And like I said, first, the dialogue was something I didn't even care about rating. That's why I rushed right through this. I mean, the dialogue was not even fun. But just that whole ending battle, it's like, oh, this was the climactic battle that we've envisioned for 30 years. Was this is what we wanted? I mean, you know what's sad is, think about it. We did not get Skeletor and Mumra fighting to, you know, take on He-Man and Lion-O. It's because they had this merged together things. Like, isn't that sad? So we didn't get to even see Skeletor and Mumra together. You know, that would have been cool. And then maybe they could have turned on each other in a battle, but we got none of that.
No,
so like I said, this is a
no great moment of Mumra and Skeletor meeting face to face, like over the
call
or at the council table. You know,
right.
Omra's, like, you know, apparition that when he can't leave the pyramid, you know, out in his mummy form, he tends to leave in like a phantom version. Having him show up in the council chamber while Skeletor's sitting on the bone throne contemplating his next plan, or Skeletor, you know, learns of the Black Pyramid, you know, conjures up a portal and goes into the Black Pyramid and confronts Mom-Ra one-on-one over the cauldron. About, like, I've heard, you know, just, I mean, it could be done so simple. We have none of that. Everything's just thrown in there, and I guess they're expecting that He-Man and Thundercat fans are just meet with eyes that will just, you know, or He-Man and Thundercats and just start licking the comic book because we don't know any better.
No, I just wonder how many people, like I said, even caught on to, you know, like what I said is, you know, that you didn't see Skeletor and you didn't see Mumra together in anything that was epic. Like I said, there was no epic thing with them and nothing epic against He-Man and Lion-O except this just goofy merger to do it quickly. Well, let's just put the two iconic characters that we were hoping to see do battle against the two, you know, iconic heroes, and let's just merge them together and now let's have this fight. It was just, the fight wasn't even fun. I mean, there was nothing fun about this. I was just so disappointed, and I pray that if there was ever anything again, please let somebody else take over writing this. Let's have a different type of crossover with it. Let it be fun, because this was, to me, a disappointment. And it's not like, okay, here's the thing. I know sometimes, you know, they always say, oh, well, you know, fans always are so critical. They're not even really He-Man fans. They're not really Thundercat fans. Just looking back at Tyler, I mean, and I know looking back at me, you're seeing Jason, but you guys have seen what I had before, too. It's not like we're not fans. We love these properties, and that's why we're so passionate.
Wait, is it challenging us because we're trashing this for being bad?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, hey, because sure, there's always going to be some people that do say that. There's been
opinion, but to sit there, yeah, have you come across someone that's challenging us as fans because we're not worshiping, you know, every sloppy turd that they throw on the comic rack?
I've had a couple comments, just a couple. Like I said, it's usually
really.
Hey, calm down, T-Greg. Hold on a second. No, but yeah, there's been a couple, but I mean, the positive outweighs the negative, but there's been the ones that, yes, will challenge a fandom. Like I said, that's why
the hell is challenging us on this?
Well, like I said, and that is why we're so passionate. We love these properties so much, and that's why we're hoping there could be something good done for it. So when we see something that we think maybe isn't that the great, sure, we're going to speak up. But if there's people out there that love it and they want to speak up, sure, go ahead. But I didn't like it, and I think that's pretty much the end of this whole run. It was just bad. They never really resolved anything. The whole stupid Jaga thing of being seen, that was never really resolved. We're not going to acknowledge issue 5,
no,
that nonsense.
We're creating golden discs of knowledge because Rob David, is that his name, whatever, happened to watch, you know, some random episode, which I'm like, I'm sorry, did you actually watch golden discs of knowledge? They do not explain what they do or what they are, other than they're just discs of knowledge, and that is it. And just sit there and say, it does this, and it does that. Oh, and this too. And it's just like, just making stuff up as he goes along.
Oh, one other quick thing that I didn't mention while trying to run through this pile of garbage. There was a part in this issue where the Sorceress is talking to He-Man, and He-Man's like talking back and saying something, and then Lionel says something like, are you talking to her? Or something like that, and he was like, yeah. He's like, and then Lionel says, note to self, talking to ghosts or whatever, makes you look crazy or however he said it. I was like, yeah, this is what he said. I was like, oh, okay, so you're acknowledging Lionel when when he talks, it's him and Jaga, nobody else sees it. So you're acknowledging there that it's only Lionel, but then you contradict it by putting the whole thing with the other Thundercats seeing Jaga, and it's like, whatever. I mean, I'm sorry, yeah, Lionel and Jaga, that whole thing, oh, God. Yeah, so he purposely says, note to self, talking to ghosts makes you look crazy. Because that's what he does.
Blue eye can sniff.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about picking the wrong week to quit sniffing glue. That would be this. No. This was bad. So that's my end of it. I don't know if you would have any final remarks, but yeah, I'm done with this horrible series.
You know, again, I don't ever want to go after anybody for having, you know, liking this. I just feel like it's a disservice to fans of both properties. It's a service to people who want a good crossover book. You know, it's a disservice of good writers. They like to hire such hacks who got no business writing comic books. Maybe they're better off writing for, you know, hey, what to feed your baby in Reader's Digest or something like that. I don't know, but
yes,
they got no business writing for these properties, much less anything for DC or Marvel or Image or Dreamwave, Wildstorm, you know, Dark Horse. Nothing. None of it. They need to be gone, you know?
Yeah, it just wasn't fun. And we're going to, like I said, before we segue, you keep talking. I'm going to move to another area. So you keep talking while I move to another area. I'm with you the whole time.
I hate it for fans, you know, especially ones who were optimistic and stuck with it the entire time and hoping that the next issue would be better than the last. From the, you know, the crummy dialogue to the no logic, just throw it in there and people will accept it because He-Man fans know nothing. And that's, I think it's demeaning to fans of the properties to just think you can say whatever you want and that people will just believe it. You know, I mean, people do it with Spider-Man, they do it with Batman, Superman, you know, the Avengers, the X-Men. If you got a incompetent writer, you know, the fans will call foul. And, you know, it's just, I think, you know, like Joe says, the sales have dropped every month. I don't know if it's sufficient enough for DC, you know, to feel like, hey, what's going on? Why are these sales dropping? They were strong the first month. But I'm just glad it's over. And if DC decides to do another He-Man book, God help us all, because I do not see them putting anybody who's competent to write a good story, much less no He-Man,
right,
in any shape or form. I have no faith in DC to pick somebody that is going to just wants to deliver the best He-Man comic book possible. I'm biding my time so I can write what I really want to, which is, you know, I don't know, give me a crummy DC character or something like that. I don't know. Like, they're just biding their time so they can get, you know, get their foot in the door and, you know, write for something else. Yeah, you know, because this is not their forte. This is not what they really wanted to be writing for.
No. You know,
maybe these idiots think they're going to be given, we're going to give you the rights to, you're going to work on Batman, you're going to work on Superman, and then we're going to relaunch Batman and Superman. You know, world's finest. You too, because you guys did such a bang-up job on, you know, on reintroducing He-Man and Thundercats to the masses with this incredible crossover.
Yeah, it was.
I hate it. I hate it so much, but thank God it's over. You know, I just.
Yeah, I'm glad it's finally over too. Like I said,
another comic book is you know, it's like the movie news. Every time, you know, someone farts in the wind, oh, hey, the movie rights have been picked up by New Line Cinema. And they managed to secure, you know, the guy who directed, you know, Quantum of Solace, you know, to do it. And I'm like, okay, wow, boy, that really means a lot to me. You know, it's just, no. It's going to, I feel like it's so easy. What's so ironic about this is writing a good He-Man story is because could be so easy. And yeah. Nobody currently knows how to crack the code because there is no code to crack. You know, they're doing these convoluted stories that act as if, like, you know, I'm going to reinvent the wheel. I'm going to reinvigorize the franchise here. You know, they get the smoker's jacket on, like, oh, yes, we're going to do that. And it's like, no, yet just stop. You know, that's the whole, one of the biggest reasons why the Filmation cartoon still stands the test of time, aside from people wanting to say, oh, man, the animation's so lacking. It's like, shut the hell up. The stories were so good because they got it. They didn't try to tell these big, convoluted, crazy, off-the-wall, like, deep, deep level Inception-style stories here. You know, it's just like, it's a simple idea. You do not need to get crazy with it. And
right.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate everything that DC's done.
It was bad.
I'm sick and tired of them. You know, it's just like, just because you got it, don't piss all over it. If yeah. you don't want to do something quality with it, and that you're that you feel like the DC logo deserves to be stamped on there, do not do it. Put it on the back burner and lose the rights or something like that. But do not just keep doing it again because you got it. You know,
it's over, and the thought of, like you said, I don't know what.
You're so red right now.
Yeah, no. So it's done. So that's, let's get that out of our system right now. So we're done with the He-Man Thunder.
Need a bucket of ice water.
Exactly. So how about you transition into whatever the next thing you want to do, and at least there'll be something a little positive. But go ahead.
Okay. I came up with this little idea over the weekend. It's kind of a fun little exercise. I want people who listen to this, I want you to share your idea on YouTube, Facebook Messenger, Twitter. Permitting Joe remembers to put this on Twitter.
Thanks.
You know, and that, with us individually. But what this is an idea of strategy. Because as we all know, Skeletor loses. Every battle he loses, for the most part. You know, of course he has a few wins here and there. But the point is, he's always relying on the same essential core group. He'll mix it up here and there. But the point is, what I told Joe, is to pick the Fearsome Four. Four members of the Evil Wars that if you felt like if you put these four guys together, this could ensure victory. And the idea is just like, okay, do you pick, in your eyes, as a fan of the Evil Warriors, which four do you think, you know, or can lead to success? If you put these four guys together, do you pick four big brute evil warriors? Do you pick four swordsmen? Do you pick magic wielders? Do you pick two muscles and a magic wielder and a strategist? Or do you pick two swordsmen and two brutes? What could possibly, if Skeletor, and as you're listening and you're coming up with this, you envision, you are Skeletor sitting at your council table, and you're going to attack five heroic warriors that are based in this particular village in the forest. And I mean, you can be whatever you want. Stratos, Buzz Off, you know, Clanchant, Fisto, Cyclone, whatever you want. But the point being is that you can only pick four. What four evil warriors do you pick to ensure that you can take out these five heroic warriors in this fictional village that they're happen to be in, whether they're running an inn for King Randor, they're picking up an artifact that was found in this particular village, whatever the case may be. But you're tired of losing. You've got to put the right combination of villains together to ensure victory.
Well, and Fearsome
Four.
Well, I got my Fearsome Four. And this Fearsome Four is excluding, we're not going to put in any bumbling. It's no silliness. This is.
Well,
his...
I will say this, just so, and Joe makes a good point. If you want to combine, you know, like an MYP version of a character and a Filmation type character, a mini, you can do that.
But that's what
has to be an evil warrior.
Yep.
That you, as Skeletor, are assigning. You four are going to go to this village, you know, figure it out. How and just put it in their hands. You figure it out.
Yeah, and that's how basically I was doing it. I was going to take elements, like you said, maybe even a little element of each person, but a character that this is how they should be written, and is if they are like how they should be, I would consider them pretty menacing. One that I will have to put in there, yes, is Beast Man. Not Beast Man in any silliness that's ever been done. No, Beast Man is thinking of this. Thinking you have a savage beast that can fight. First, if he's angry, vicious with the whip, what other weapons? But also, you have somebody that can control animals. So you don't know, while you're fighting, like you say you're the hero and you're fighting Beast Man, you don't know if you're going to get hit from the sky by a flying creature he's commanding while he's fighting you. Just like we've seen in other episodes, things that could come out of the ground. You don't know where you're going to be hit because you're not only fighting Beast Man, you're fighting every creature that this beast can control. This is a serious Beast Man, not a silly Beast Man. So with Beast Man, you have him and you have his ability to control animals. So that's pretty damn scary when you don't know what's going to be going on during a fight. So I pick Beast Man. And you bet I'm going to pick Evil Lyn because you have somebody that's a magic user that is pretty damn almost as powerful as Skeletor. Somebody who wants to rule almost like how he does, who she teams with other people and is conniving and sneaky, but this is a magic user that is very powerful, just like on the level of Skeletor. So when you have a couple magic users against a lot of the heroes where there's usually not many magic users, I mean, what you got, Orko, you got Sorceress, you got what? So that's why Evil Lyn, she helps to, you know, weigh the scale in their favor. Then I went to, this is when I went to something different. I went to Ninjor, because Ninjor, we've seen some of them, but not enough. But then that's stealth. That's not only a warrior that is good with weapons, all sorts of weapons. I mean, he's a ninja, for God's sake. But somebody that can hide in the shadows, smoke bombs, you know, mysterious popping here and there. How are you gonna hit what you can't see? So for me, I think Ninjor definitely is part of the four. And then finally, this one I struggled with. I kept thinking, I was like, who could be a great fourth? Because there's so many. But then I was like, there's a character that has elements of his abilities in different canons, and it's Triclops. Triclops, not only in some can you, he sees things through rock, has a special vision, but then in other abilities, his eyes can actually shoot and are used for, like, you know, attacking. But then not only in some canons is he a bounty hunter, but in others, he's creating weapons. It's like, if you put all of those characteristics together into one person, I mean, yes, it's a lot. I was like, wow, could you imagine a bounty hunter that also is making weapons but also can blast and see things? Triclops and hand-to-hand with the sword, a sword combat. You get into sword combat, you got somebody that's going to rival He-Man. You might need somebody that's going to do hand-to-hand sword combat. So that's Triclops. So I'm putting Beastman, Evil Lyn, Ninjor, Triclops. That's my fearsome force.
Well, I tell you, all I can say is great minds think alike here.
Oh, okay.
Because I picked Triclops as my leader.
Okay.
Because I figured Triclops being the bounty hunter, skilled swordsman, a great tactical fighter, I figured he needs to be the one to kind of pinpoint, okay, when to head in, from what directions. You know, I just feel like this guy can take people out by the numbers, like we've seen in the mini comic. Obviously, he's very skilled with the sword. He's strong enough to, you know, take on He-Man physically. So I have Triclops leading the way, but also telling the other three where they need to attack from.
Okay.
I picked Beast Man
right,
to pretty much head in the front of the village with, and that's the thing about Beast Man is, like, as far as I'm concerned, there are no limits as to how many beasts and races of creatures that Beastmen can summon at once.
Yeah.
So you take in the fact you can summon Shadow Beast,
Griffins?
Spider Swords, or just any kind of prehistoric monsters, anything that's close by, just random, you know, pterodactyls and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd have Beastman using air strikes with winged creatures. You've got brutes with shadow beasts. You could even have, you know, various snakes, as you saw, like an MYP, like in the Underworld. Yeah. Just a whole horde of these things all at once charging the front of the village. Now, at the top, I'd say if it was a surrounded by cliffs, like in the rear of the village or trees, I'd have Ninjor hiding in high ground, picking off people with the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
You know, anybody, if anybody's trying to directly leave a particular part of the village, you got Ninjor firing arrows like to hit, you know, certain guys in the legs. Or if Buzz Off's flying through the air unsuspectingly, hit, you know, fires an arrow into one of his wings to kind of sever, you know, like, you know, I mean, just having a silent assassin hiding on the high ground, watching people in different directions, and like, hey, look, that guy's trying to get out, fire an arrow at him, or even putting arrows in some of these guys, so that way the shadow beasts have even a bigger advantage over some of these heroic warriors.
Yeah.
And then my fourth one, at the rear of the village, attacking from the rear, I use chemical warfare in Stinkor.
Okay.
So I've got hordes of creatures attacking from the front. Stinkor's stink is you know, his fog is coming through the rear of the village and just kind of pushing, you know, both sides to the center of the village. You got Ninja watching the top and Triclops going through and either attacking at the right moment or, you know, commanding or Ninja. You know, we got Stratus is heading from the east side, you know, take him down, you know, or they got, you know, Ram-Man's, you know, charting, you know, put some arrows in his legs or even swoop down and start, you know, attacking with the samurai. So I just feel like I had so much fun thinking about this because I initially had thought, like, I got to work Clawful in there as a brute, like Clash of Arms Clawful. I got to have Triclops in there. But I'm like, I thought Stinkor. It's like, you think of him, especially at MYP, when he's going through the canyons and there's just this tremendous fog of stink is just, you know, sending animals running away from him. I'm like, how could that not be harnessed and used? I mean, it just feels like that's so underused, stink.
Yeah, I mean, his stink is so bad that he's got to even wear a mask for his own stink.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, not so much because you don't want to, you know, overcome, you know, toxic, you know, or poison the shadow beast and the other creatures, but to keep the villagers from retreating, you know, you surround them with stink that they either would collapse from the lack of oxygen because they can't breathe, or they run in the other direction, which is either be worried about being picked off by Ninjor.
Yeah, or I like that.
Through Beastman and his horde of creatures and Triclops waiting around for unsuspecting, you know, villagers. Oh, I'm getting so worked up, you know, excited. I just feel like, you know, and this could, it's just like, I never played Risk, but I'm thinking like, this is Risk. You come up with like different strategies of like a particular scenario. It's like, how are you going to take this? And this could work. We could even do like a Castle Grayskull. Like, how could the Evil War successfully go into Castle Grayskull? I mean, just, you know, who would you use? Would you use magic? Would you use brute force? Would you use Webstore, the escape artist? You know, what could you do? I mean, it just feel like, just based on the scenario, I feel like that would be, it's no end of the possible. And I would love to do this with the Horde. Like, what four Horde members could successfully, you know, take, I don't know, Whispering Woods? Or could they take Devlin? Could they take, you know, any kind of, you know, the Mysticore, you know, or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, it makes you sit and think, because that was funny. You brought them up, and just to let people out there know, we didn't shoot these ideas back and forth to each other. We never said our picks.
Joe was telling me Ninjor, Beastman, and Trigon, something like, dear God, man, he's got three of my fearsome four already. And it's like, you know, but it makes sense, you know.
Yeah, and really,
I'm sure people can come up with a reason to use Cobra Khan because he's master of snakes.
Right.
Have Cobra Khan command every snake within the surrounding 10 miles of just coming at this village, like an infestation of snakes, you know, and it's just,
It makes you think. Like I said, it does make you think. Because I really did sit and think. I mean, when I was sitting there debating on the fourth and who to pick, but no, because, you know, it's easy. Sometimes you have your favorites. Like, you're like, oh, man, I'd like to have Jitsu in there. I'd like to have, like you said, Clawful or Merman. And sometimes it's your favorites, but then you sit there and think, okay, what all can they do? I mean, not saying they're any less of characters, but.
Yeah, because I wanted to put Too Bad in, because Too Bad is my favorite Evil Orb. I'm like, you know what? Logically, you know, I mean, if we're thinking of a serious Too Bad, yeah, you could have him as a strategist. Not necessarily maybe the leader of the group, but I just kind of felt like Triclops, I feel like it's such a strong villain, like I'd have him as my leader, you know, utilizing chemical warfare with Stink Orb. I mean, to have somebody who commands every creature on the planet at his will just by, you know, I mean, he didn't even have to be around them. He can just sense that he knows that they're around and just sends a telepathic, you know, message to some random creature 20 miles away.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so we had good picks that were so similar. So maybe next time we'll maybe sit there and figure, like, who would be the best heroic warriors to maybe go on the hero side.
Yeah. See, that would be awesome, too. It's like we come up with a particular – yeah, it's like we had to work together and come up with a particular scenario that the evil warriors have – you know, done. Have they captured a village? Have they taken an artifact in Arcadia? Have they, you know, have they went to Darksmoke and are planning to invade, you know, parts of Darksmoke and or what? I mean, there's no end to the possibilities on that too. But picking the right heroic warriors for a particular, now that's what we'll have to do next time.
All right, that sounds cool. So, well, that was fun. That was fun, and definitely, if you're ever wondering how to get into Grayskull. Just take the Lizard Man route. Just go right and, like, howling back at you, go in the window.
You know, it's like a problem solved right there.
Problem solved, right in the window. There you go.
I encourage listeners to you know, when we post this, you know, share your thoughts. Give us your fearsome four. You know, who did you come up with? You know, do you feel like Merman could lead the charge? On if you feel like you can come up with a reason for it, by God, share it and say what. You know, I love picking teams and think of it. Like we said, don't pick your favorites, pick the strategy. What put these like I always love that game, Ultimate Alliance, that Marvel's Ultimate Alliance, where you pick four superheroes to work together. And who do you pick? Do you pick, you know, brute characters? Do you pick quickness and speed? Do you pick agility? Do you pick like projectiles? You know, so I just feel like with Heroic Warriors, I mean, you got from things like Extendar and Mechanac, you've got Clamshamp and Fisto for like pure strength. You've got Cyclone, Buzzoff, and Stratos who could go up into the air. I mean, you've got so many things to choose from, but why would you choose those? And I look forward to doing it.
Definitely. So that was cool. So, well, our final topic, we're going to discuss an MYP episode. And that episode is Separation. That was a pretty good one for me. There was a lot of things. First, not only, like I said, I enjoyed the episode. It was just a good one, but there's parts of it to where there was things I wanted to have after watching the episode, and of course was kind of let down. Not to say that, hey, this is just it's like a 30-minute toy commercial, you know, like how they always said about the old days. But I'll admit there was a couple things, like, you know, seeing the Wind Raider. I know that it was probably in a couple episodes, but, man, I wanted the Wind Raider so bad, you know, especially after watching that episode. It seemed like they showed a lot of it. How many episodes did they show the Wind Raider in MYP? Was it quite a few?
Oddly enough, but we ended up getting stuff like the Battle Hawk and the
– yeah.
I think it's called, like, the Battle Ram, not, like –
the Battle Ram Chariot, or whatever it's called.
It had like this metallic ram symbol on. It was big, and it would kind of punch out as if like to hit enemies, and they hold like a big bicycle almost.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't it called the Battle Ram Chariot or the Ram Chariot or something?
Well, the Skeletor had the Ram Chariot, and then I don't even know
because I didn't get them all. I'll admit,
the spur of the moment here, I'm drawing a bit of a blank, but to me. The MYP vehicles were Skeletor's Ram Chariot was the only memorable vehicle, I thought. The rest of them were so forgettable, from the Pterodactyl to the Battle Hawk. And
you know, that's funny. I got every figure, but not to sidetrack real quick, but yes, we will. The vehicles and stuff, that was the only thing I didn't care about getting. it's strange. It's like, I didn't know if it's because I didn't really have display room, but I was like, these don't throw me at all. So there was a couple I got in for fun, but I was like, I don't even care about getting them all. But if they would have had a Wind Raider, I would have got the Wind Raider.
Yeah, I'd have been happy. And I bought every one. I bought one mint in box, and I bought one to take out of the package. And but, you know, they were all forgettable. Every one of them, from the Samurai Raptor, you know, to the War Whale. They just, I felt like they don't have that same flow. You know, they just, I don't know. A name like the War Whale sounds fine, but it just, I mean, that was okay. Then you had like the squid, the water vehicle that the Evil Warriors would ride.
What about the generic, what were they, the fight packs that were basically
kind of versions? And the Eagle Flight Pack, I think it's
because for me, they felt like they were ripoffs of Zoar and Screech. I felt like those were my poor man's versions of Zoar and Screech when I got those.
They never used the Eagle Flight Pack at all, but the Bat Pack would look like it would come by and pick Skeletor up on a rare occasion, as if, like, is it an actual creature, or is it... This is what it looked like, that the bat backpack accessory was featured on occasional times where it would swoop by and pick Skeletor up, like when he's losing, the battle's over. This gets him out of, you know, being... You
know, that was a quick side rant of crazy toys. It just happened. Apologize, but I had to do that. So anyway, Separation, it's funny how you were talking about Too Bad earlier and Stinkor earlier, because this was an episode where Too Bad... basically Tuvar was really getting fed up with Badger. Badger is just, you know, disgusting when he eats and giving them gas while they're burping. And they, you know, he just can't stand being connected with them. And in comes Stinkor to funk everything. I said funk with an N in case people said it, thought I said something. Stinkor came and funked up the room, and then they wanted to be separated. And he lets them know that, you know, he knows somebody that could possibly help that's good with a bunch of spells and magic and stuff that might be able to separate them. And he's like, you want me to show you the way? And they're like, no. So basically, they're going to go find this guy to help separate them. Within that, there's like a little side story. In the side story, you see Adam and Teela, for once, if you will, they're getting along. There's no snarkiness from Teela to Adam. And they're playing like, I don't know, you could say like a Eternia's version of chess or Connect Four with, you know, Marlena and Manadar.
Floating balls.
Yeah, floating balls. So since there's these balls in the air and went down, I was thinking, okay, I just pitch a Connect Four and they fall down. I don't know.
Yeah, checkers, chess, something like that.
So they're Martin playing it. And then finally, the children beat the parents. You know, for once they beat their parents, you know, and then there was a nice little moment where kind of like Adam and Teal, like, you know, do their little celebrating. Then the children are hugging the parents. And you see Cyclone in the background. I think he's with Roboto. In Cyclone, it's making him think about his family and everybody that he's lost and doesn't see his family no more. Roboto is like, well, did you want to go see if any of them are still alive, if there's any descendants or whatever? There's like a side story, if you will. Of course, you know, Cyclone never does find anybody left of his family there. Was it supposed to be Anwat Gar they went to, or was it just somewhere else?
Yeah, they don't say it, but I always took it as, I mean, even the music I think that was used in Anwat Gar is played when they go through the brush and they come upon the city, but you kind of think that, well, Cyclone was already at Anwar Gar, wouldn't he kind of know if there was anybody, you know, unless it was, you know, we don't know how big Anwar, and Larry DeTaylor wrote this episode, so I'm not gonna, you know, try and find plot holes here, because really there are no plot holes, but, you know, I'm sorry, I'm getting too side.
That's fine. So there's just, so that's this little side story. But within this, Too Bad finds the guy's place that has this spell. As the guy finds the spell of separation, you know, he looks like, oh, no, I can't give this to you, because the spell of separation isn't just about separating a person in half. It has a much deeper meaning. Too Bad's like, no, I'm going to get this. I think he knocks the guy to the side. The guy, when he falls down, he drops his tablet. And Too Bad picks it up to find the locations of everything. But what he didn't see was a part that broke off and is on the ground. And it was like an image of basically a planet being split in half, which obviously is Eternia. So they have to find these parts that are scattered throughout Eternia. And the first one is like, I think, in the depths of like the ocean. And when they get this first piece of this puzzle, or of this triad. I think it was called a triad. Was it a triad?
Yeah.
They called it? Okay. We get the triad. The second he grabs that out of there, suddenly the sorceress feels it, you know, like the power, it awakens her, and she's like, she contacts Adam, like, there's trouble, and you must come to Grayskull. And he gets to Castle Grayskull, and she tells the story of what this device is. This was something that Hordak and his, the wizards or those, what are they called? Yes. It's something that he was going to use to take over back then Eternia. And when he used this spell of separation, you see it was what created the light and the dark hemisphere. This is what created the dark hemisphere, was this spell. But also, the planet then started cracking in half, and even Hordak knew this was too much. Like, okay, this is going to not only, this is going to make my existence, the entire world, it's worth nothing because the world's going to be destroyed. So he commands them to stop this spell. When they stop the spell, it splits these three pieces and divides them across Eternia to hide, basically, so it can't be put together. But throughout the years, somebody must have found where these three artifacts were. So that's why Sorceress is telling He-Man, you have got to stop Too Bad. Or not Too Bad, you have to stop. Somebody's doing this, and they probably don't know what they're doing. And eventually when they go, I think it's to the underground area where the Caligars are, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, when they go to Subterranean. Yeah, he gets the next piece off of there, and then He-Man shows up. He's trying to tell him, of course, Too Bad's not listening. What's cool is you see Too Bad with – he's got a lot of tricks, at least the Tuvar side. It seems like there's a lot of items he uses. You know, like when he's throwing out those –
Tuvar relied a lot on – kind of like Predator. He's got different what's the right word? It's definitely – whereas Badger's Bounty Hunter was relied more on traps and just kind of primitive ways of capturing, you know, a bounty, whereas Tuvar, you know, relies on different weapons and technology.
Exactly.
You know, from smoke bombs and invisibility,
right.
Shot, you know, rods and stuff like that. And
yeah, and exploding things. And then
he shoots out of that small, looks like a grappling gun that Batman would fires that wad of diamonds. And yes. it's sent off as a distraction, but it looked really cool. Like
it did, because when he first threw them up, I was like, why is he throwing like gems at these people? I thought he was like giving them like a payoff, and then they exploded. Because you're right, it looked magical and wonderful. It's like,
wait. He throw the diamonds, or do they fire out out of the little handgun that he pulled?
Okay, you know what's funny? I thought he threw.
Rewatched it today, and I'm like, I remember the diamonds, but for some reason, I cannot remember if he threw the. I was thinking he fired the diamonds.
You're probably
down
right.
Down a hallway to make them think, what the hell was that?
Well, he did. I mean, he did fire down a hallway and explode. So you're right; it was probably fired. In my head, I thought he threw them, but you're right; that makes more sense. He probably shot him out. But so when He-Man's there, and he's basically, you know, he wants what he has, like, you know, put down that bag or what. He puts it down. He's like, now step away from the bag and let me see your hands or something. I was like, what is He-Man, a cop? Because it reminded me of a cop moment. And he's like, okay, let's see what you see. And then he opens his hand, and it's a flash, like this burst of light that blinds He-Man and Battle Cat, and, you know, to stop and, you know, distract them so they can get away. Well, they eventually do get this last piece. And when they get this last piece, they see, you know, the shoots up in the air. They knew something's going on. They're like, okay, God, well, maybe we shouldn't have done this. And then they, you know, take off. They run away. He-Man's got to, of course, save the day. But to do this, he's got to, not only when he stops that spell from happening, he's now got to return each piece to each location. So he's got to find all the locations of where they're at, which I guess, obviously, the sorceress must have told him. So I was like, okay, I know you knew of, like, at least one, you know, because you were there with two, you know, Too Bad, but how did you know the exact spots without the map that Too Bad had? But I'm just assuming, okay, the sorceress let him know. So he eventually saves the day, but within all this, when they come back to, I think it was the Palace of Eternity, when everything's being destroyed, you see how everybody's working together. Ram-Man's knocking a column back in place, you know, to make sure nothing collapses on people. You've seen, and this is another part where I was talking about the Wind Raider earlier. Man, I got excited for one moment. I remember when I first seen this. I thought they were going to show Snout Spout. Because when those fires were going, you remember, and you see those, yeah, you see the firefighters, I swear, I was like, oh my God, they're going to show Snout Spout. They're like, damn, they didn't show them. So we didn't get Snout Spout. But something I think was getting ready to fall, like one of the comms was getting ready to fall on Teela and Man-at-Arms, and then suddenly you see it get blown away. and there was Cyclone that showed up and used his powers. I love seeing Cyclone doing using his powers. But after everything's all saved, Cyclone basically found out that, you know what, I have a family here. So he's looking for a family. You know what, you have a family here all along. So it was a kind of, I guess, a nice moral message. But what's more, you know, that you got out of it, too? Because it was a good episode. It was really good.
This was a big deal for me when this episode first aired, because Too Bad being my favorite evil warrior, to have an episode that's strictly devoted to him as the sole villain of the episode was a big deal. And it was awesome to see two of the 1985 villains conversing together on screen for the first time with Stinkor and Too Bad. I'm like, this is so surreal. I'm like, two characters like Too Bad's being treated with dignity, and Stinkor's finally in a cartoon. This is great. And they're talking. They're the only villains of the show.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. And to get the first tease of Hordak.
Oh, God.
I remember after that episode, everyone just lost their minds because everyone called this Hordak. I'm like, oh, dear God. This is awesome. It was because this was just such a it wasn't something that I think. Because when these episodes came out, like the synopsis was released for every episode.
Okay. But
they certainly didn't know, Easter eggs and things like that. So nobody knew that Hordak was even going to be mentioned, let alone shown in this episode. So it just kind of took everyone by surprise to think. And he's got race, and people are thinking, is this Shadow Weavers? A bunch of Shadow Weavers? And, everyone was just losing their minds. I was too. Me and my brother both.
Oh, I lost that. I remember yelling. Just seeing Hordak, I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, you're right. Everybody freaked out because I was like, there is Hordak. You wanted him so badly.
Yeah, it was great, and it was awesome to see Too Bad, especially Tuvar, because Tuvar, of the two, the blue head as a kid was always my favorite because it looked like a vampire. But even as an adult, Tuvar is still my favorite, especially because, I just all the kind of predator-like stuff that he did in Monster with him. But to see him using all these different, using the gun, with the diamonds and just the flash, the palm flash, and it's still Too Bad it can do flips over He-Man, even as two bounty hunters combined, they're still very formidable. They're not it's not Beast Man, it's not Whiplash. It's like no, these are two bounty hunters. I mean that they, it just feels like they're still smart. They still can get the best of He-Man. And He-Man didn't actually stop them. Like, they chose to step away. They successfully succeeded at doing what they were setting out to do, and then backtracked and faced no repercussions. So you can say this. He-Man did not defeat Too Bad. Too Bad won in this episode.
And it's true. And, more of it, for me, it felt like it was, Tuvar's side, because he was pretty much the guy that was heading off everything. He's the one that had the whole strategy. And it's like Badger was kind of there, just there. And it's sad that he couldn't.
And actually, it was interesting to see legitimately Badger was like, I don't know if this is such a good idea. It's not like He-Man was trying to beat us up. He was saying we shouldn't do this. And it was to have them not, one side is all like, you don't know what you're talking about. The other was like, should we rethink this? It was good to play off that, that they both are smart, but they also think within reason too. And it was nice to see the villain realize the mistake or have hesitation.
Well, that's what was interesting, was Tuvar is the one that you would assume how he was speaking and, basically heading off everything. You'd assume Tuvar is the intelligent one because Badger was always like, oh, me do this, me do,
He's very brutish. He's very, very
brutish. But also you see that, he might look brutish and sound like he's, caveman-like, but he was actually one that had the most common sense, because when they were doing it, he was thinking about back what He-Man said. He was like, you sure we should be doing this? He-Man said maybe, I think he even referred to about He-Man, maybe he was right about this. He's trying to be the voice of reason, and you wouldn't think he would be. And of course, he is the one that's right. But the other one, he's just so hell-bent about wanting to be separated and doing everything, he's not listening. But then when he finally activates that device and sees what's going on, he's realizing, okay, yeah, maybe we should get out of here then. So I wish that Badger could have had more of a part. But, I can understand. You're going to work on one side. It's just, that's how it's written. I mean, still a great character. But it just seemed like Tuvar is the one that they were writing most of everything being done for.
Well, Tuvar got the funny moments of the show. Like, he's the one that's eating and causing, you know, Tuvar to burp, or, you know, Badger's burping, and, you know, Badger got two parts. He got the comic relief, and he got the logical mindset, whereas Tuvar's got, you know, the tactical fighting skills in this episode, along with just pure, you know, I don't care, not thinking straight kind of villain mentality, where all you're consumed with is just this one goal. Everything else surrounding you is obsolete.
Yeah.
So I felt like, I get what you're saying about Badger kind of being shortchanged, but I felt like, you know, at the beginning and the end of the episode, Badger's doing, you know, some of the kind of, like at the end, they're sitting at the table, Badger's eating.
Right back to eating. You
know, causes Tuvar to burp, and mouths off, and he takes the plate of food and smashes it in Tuvar's face just with his big smile. And it was fun because, you know, as kids, you know, it's clearly safe to say that Larry DiTillo had this, you know, I think was aware that these two guys, two heads, two arms.
I love seeing them fight.
Smack each other, fight, fight, you know, argue and bicker.
It's funny.
We got to see that. In this, and that's because every kid who had too bad punched each other's, you know, punched the other's face. Every kid did that.
You know how earlier when I said my picks and you said I felt like, you know, we were on the same wavelength? That's what I was going to mention. That is what I loved about the beginning. Because at the beginning, they were fighting just like we used to make them punch each other. It's like, oh, we finally got to see them act it out. And it's strange you said it because I was going to say the same thing. So they knew what they were doing. I love that. I love seeing that back and forth between them.
Yeah, it was great. And I was so glad to see Too Bad owned two episodes. Like, both episodes that Too Bad is heavily focused on were two of the better episodes of NYP. This was a solid episode. And Too Bad's even using scuba attack gear, man, to go down to the Sea of Rakash to get that one underwater fish. Like, no way, man, scuba attack. I mean, not the real scuba attack, but it's
going to hear something.
Going to get.
Oh, yeah. You want to hear one stupid thing from me before we wrap probably this part up? Because I know how you are.
Joe Amato here.
Exactly, because I always love it when I'll say something like, oh, Joe, where did you get that from? Why did you think that? But I'll say it anyways. When they did go into, you know, under the water, and they were getting that first artifact, and they were showing all the hieroglyphics and battles of warriors and stuff up there. For me, even though I know it wasn't, there was like some creature up there that had spikes all over his face, and I always felt like, is that supposed to be Spikor? Wait, did they have battles with Spikor's people? For me, I always thought that that character, I know it wasn't, but I was like, are these supposed to be Spikor's race? Did you know what I'm talking about or no?
I know what you're talking about, and my initial, like, I thought kind of looked like Spikor, but then I thought, those are Caligars. Those have got to be Caligars.
Oh, is it definitely? Okay. I mean,
It's not written in stone, but, you know, take another look at it. It looks like I'm pretty sure it's Caligars fighting what appears to be Merman's race of people.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because just for me, I remember.
Alligators fighting, you know, fish, you know, essentially. So
at least it was just the first impression. Yeah, it was just the first impression.
But don't get me wrong. Part of those hieroglyphs do look like an army of Spikors, but I think it's supposed to be Caligars.
Okay. All right.
But,
That was a good episode.
It's a great battle, race against time, battle against time kind of thing, where, you know, the hero's got to, you know, track them down, stuff like that. And it was good because they visited so many, you know, the Mother Dragon shows back up again.
Yeah.
Water sequence. You've got Saturnia seeing the Caligars again. Stinkor gets, you know, a nice little brief appearance. And as much I don't like Roboto's voice after Roboto's Gambit, like, I felt like they got the voice right. After that, he sounds too perky. And I don't like that over, like, even though the 2000X version of Roboto kicks so much ass,
the
perky voice where he's just so upbeat. And I'm like, no, you had it right the first time you showed Roboto. And I don't know what they did, but they never could get it right after that. However, I do love the team up of Cyclone and Roboto as buddies.
That was
thought that worked so well that they're not humans. They're not bugs. They're definitely. I kind of feel like a robot and this kind of mystical Asian, at least in this Asian-inspired, I have no idea how you can describe Cyclone, because he clearly is not human, even though he is human-like. But I don't know, just the seeing the two of them together, I could picture like Buzz Off and Mechanic, Roboto and Cyclone. Like, I can picture these guys off doing their own adventures. you know, fighting Too Bad and Spikor in some village or something like that. You know, I could see them having their own adventures together. I just would love to see more of that. And I liked pairing those two together. And I thought it was a great idea. So it was...
We didn't see much of Roboto do anything, though, correct? I mean, Roboto really...
Not in that episode. He really didn't do squat. You know, it's... But, like, not. I mean, obviously not every episode can showcase him, but Roboto's Gambit, that's the pinnacle episode for Roboto.
Yeah, we'll have to cover that someday, too. We will.
I look forward to that because we get to slam Teela for being, you know, over the top obnoxious in that one.
Well, and hey, but we've got it.
Episode two, so.
Well, this one, she was, like I said, there was nothing like that. It was, she was written to where she was.
You know, obsolete after we get the, you know, basic, you know, oh, look, we beat, you know, mom and dad here. Yes, high five. And. I hate 2000X Teela. I hate her. There are no positive qualities about 2000X Teela. Filmation Teela, live action Teela.
We'll have to hold that for a Teela one. Because, like you said, I wasn't part of the Teela one. We'll have to revisit Teela, and she'll be a character spotlight coming up. So.
Yes. And I will put more positive comments about at least Filmation Teela. Because I do like, even though she is, for lack of a better word, bitch. Excuse me. You know, not all the time, most of the time.
But, Tyler has his Teela.
There's fine qualities about Teela. There are, but we're going to save that for another day.
Another time. So.
But yeah, this is if you have not watched it, if you're coming back to the fold as a He-Man fan and missed the 2000X cartoon, or if you haven't watched it in a long time, or it was something that you're like, you know, don't really remember. I don't know how anybody could not remember with Hordak's cameo being in it, like that made. You know, much like Powers of Grayskull, everybody remembers it for the Horde. They don't remember it for that other abomination that was in the show.
Grayskull's fantastic. So, yeah, so see Separation. It is a great
game. Yeah, check it out. You know, after you listen to this, you know, go pop in your DVD set of Separation or look it up on YouTube. It's available to watch on YouTube right now. So
yes, it is.
There'd be no excuse for you to not have seen this episode. So go check it out and enjoy it and see if you look at it the same way we do.
Exactly. Just anytime you know, whether it's lunch, whenever you have free time, it's only, what, 23 minutes? So there's plenty of time to watch this while you're having a nice lunch break or anytime.
There are no excuses, you know, stuff like that. Just go and enjoy yourself. Like we do. We do it all the time.
Exactly. So, well, how do you want to wrap her up, T-Rex?
Before I get to my epic moment, I wanted to give everyone a brief update on the mini comic project with Carson. He's under the weather, but he's working on the pencils and everything, and he was able to provide a teaser image of a panel that he has drawn, inked, and colored of Cyclone, because Cyclone is featured in this mini comic. And just by this image, I offer for people trying to figure out what could possibly make Cyclone so angry in this particular panel. What could he be doing? Is he did someone dump his books, or is something going on in this particular book that he's ready to go into action?
So, and that looks fantastic, by the way.
It does. I told Carson when he gave it to me, he's like, this looks like it came out of one of Larry Houston's mini comics. It's so vibrant. And the intensity behind Cyclone's face, it's just like, oh boy! As like, if this one image looks so good, like, I can't wait to see what he's done with the rest of the stuff to work together on. So
it's gonna be sick. I'm
definitely not gonna spoil a whole lot until the book is actually available to purchase and that everyone see it for themselves. But we do, whenever I get something from Carson like this, you know, I will share it just to kind of pique people's interest to keep them notified that it's coming. You know, a little teaser image here, a little teaser image there. We'll try to put together a nice trailer with some cool music or something like that in the future when more of it's done. But I just wanted to share that and let everyone know it's coming. And here's the first official image from inside the book of Cyclone ready for action here.
Thanks for sharing that, though. That does look great.
Thanks, Carson, buddy. I really appreciate that. And you know, I hope you get better much sooner, dude. I know you've been sick for a while, but you busted your butt and got this done for the show. So I really do appreciate that, bud. Get well soon.
There you go.
And I see that ends that. And my epic moment is the He-Man challenging Skeletor in Evelyn's plot when they're in, and we've talked about this episode, and I just lost my mind. I shouldn't have even went through it. I just felt like that's an episode I would love to go back and just re-experience. I just talked too much during that episode. But anyway, the moment when Skeletor is melting down the cordite and saying that it will make him strong enough to crush He-Man, He-Man take, you know, bursts into the cave with his bare fist, and Evelyn's face like turns to, oh, you know, shit. You know, this look on that I've never seen Evelyn do throughout the entire series, this old total shock. And excuse my language, I cuss more than usual, and I apologize for kids that are listening. I'm just trying to emphasize that she was so like, oh my gosh, like Skeletor just ran his mouth at the wrong possible time, and it's about to go down right now, because He-Man comes in, sword unsheathed, standing next to Battlecat. That's a pretty big bow, Skeletor. And challenges him, would you care to prove it? I just love the badass of He-Man. It's just like, you got to be kidding, Skeletor. You, there's no way you are going to, you know, be as strong as me. And just challenge. Like, he's anxious to go into battle, into combat, one-on-one with Skeletor in this volcanic cave. I just felt like that's one of those moments where He-Man has every right to be confident and a little bit cocky, because he knows, like, you're not going to beat me. Are you out of your mind? I just love that moment. Like, that didn't stick with me so much as a kid until I got so much older. I'm like, that is so cool. I mean, the writing that Paul Dini did of writing He-Man, you know, it just is so confident in his, you know, not just his power, but it's like, you can't beat me, Skeletor. You know, I just love that idea. It's so cool. And for Evelyn to sit there, you know, and show, not even say a word, but like, oh Lord, you know, like that was the wrong thing to say. Like, oh boy.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So cool. So that's my epic moment is the showdown of Volcano K from Evelyn's plot.
All right. Well, that's a great epic moment. But yeah, we'll eventually have to, like you said, maybe revisit the episode.
Yeah, I rented the entire episode. I'm like, that had to have been so boring for listeners. Like, for me to be, oh, and this happened. And then it's like, you know what? I'd rather just go do, you know, a highlight the best stuff about that episode and explain why it was so good with you. And not right. I hate that I did that. Gosh.
No, man, it was fine. So, all right, well, for me, I'll say what I always say. Go to fansofpower.com. Go to popculturenetwork.com. Go to HeManWorld.com. And on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe, He-Man, She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
You want to be a farmer? Here's a couple of acres.
Oh my God, and I don't know that.